Chapter 70. Choices. My life as a newbie member of the Findhorn Foundation continued to be full-on and interesting. Before too long, my broad textile teaching experience was put to good use by the weaving studio at the park, where I helped to present the Fabric of Life workshop for guests. Yet another gig was a collaboration with my partner Alan's fledgling youth project. He was quick to take advantage of my skills, and I ran art sessions for the Foundation teenagers, in addition to focalizing the Clooney Laundry. As Alan's project developed, he became more and more involved planning projects with the teenagers. Thanks to him, they now had a constructive place to put their adolescent energy. He embodied Pied Piper-esque qualities, and his out-of-hours interactions often cut into the time we spent together. Because of this, I felt more and more on the outer. Somehow, our relationship stumbled along, but I was becoming weary of the expectation that I'd be there for Alan whenever he had a space, as he disliked being alone. What we had become as a couple was less and less my idea of a meaningful and supportive relationship. As the strain was showing, Alan suggested we take a week off to go down to his family's holiday cottage in Leadhills, an historic mining village south of Glasgow. Our time there was marked by grey skies, freezing winds, and rain, hardly holiday weather. To counter the gloom of the cramped miner's cottage, I picked a small bunch of flowers from the backyard for the kitchen table, my feeble concession to beauty. What with lousy weather, and lack of funds, we were housebound. I was relieved to discover that Test cricket was on TV, England versus Australia. What a lifesaver. Fortunately, I'd brought my knitting, so I spent 3 days watching cricket and knitting. On the fourth day, I ventured out into the bleak greyness, to visit the historic Leadhills Miners' Library, with its famous collection of well-worn books. As I flicked through some of them, I noticed that the margins of most pages were smudged grey by the blackened fingers of generations of miners. Our Leadhills holiday was an ordeal rather than an opportunity to spend quality time together. Alan shut down, I shut down, and there was little interaction between us. By day five the test was over, and I'd had enough, so we left the cottage. In all my travels, before or since, I can't remember being more relieved to depart a place. On the way back to Clooney, Alan took me to see the Burrell Collection, on the outskirts of Glasgow. My spirits lifted immediately as we approached the magnificent purpose-built complex that contained an equally magnificent collection of collections. There were 8,000 objects in all, the life's work of one man, William Burrell, offering a snapshot of British imperialism. After the greyness of Leadhills, I was craving colour, and found it in the numerous lead light panels, the wall-hung woven tapestries, and the paintings. As we wandered the galleries, I felt quite at home because this was the world I understood. In sharp contrast to the colourless mining village we'd just left behind, the contrast was extreme. Two diametrically opposed worlds, and I knew to which I belonged. It was at this point I realised our relationship was on the skids. As we drove back to Clooney, I broke the news to Alan. Our relationship had lasted for 7 months. For me, the breakup was very painful. After some months, I moved out of Clooney, to live at Drumduin House, another foundation property nearby. Through the emotional turmoil, I continued to focalize the Clooney Laundry. As my second Scottish winter approached, the prospect of another round of short, cold, grey days with the ground sometimes sprinkled with snow, had little appeal, because the novelty of snow play had since melted away. Out of the blue, my mother sent me a return ticket to Mexico and I was overjoyed. I departed Scotland with unbridled glee, to spend 6 weeks in my mother's recently renovated house in San Miguel de Allende, northwest of Mexico City. As soon as I plugged into the energy and excitement of Latin America, my mood improved, and I had fun catching up with friends from my time at the Instituto Allende. I'd not been back from Mexico long before I was offered a work department at the park. This time as craft buyer with the Phoenix Shop, the Foundation's retail outlet. With the job came a room at Cologne, the Foundation's garden school, that was within walking distance of the park. At last, I was well away from Cluny and its unhappy associations. I splurged and bought myself a small TV, a bicycle, and a second-hand red VW Golf. I was looking forward to my new job. The shop sold clothing, craft, jewelry, candles, packaged and tinned food, as well as a most comprehensive range of esoteric books. Hundreds of people came through weekly, guests, day trippers, and members. All in all, the Phoenix shop did a roaring trade. It didn't take me long to master the job, and I stayed long enough to rearrange the central sales space to work more efficiently. On the appointed day, the shop was closed for the change around. The first task was to reposition the cash register closer to the door, thereby freeing up the central space to display stock. For me, the highlight of the process was that we discarded nothing, because we found a spot for every single display cabinet and the shop team was as chuffed as I was with the revamp. The Phoenix revamp came to the attention of one of the Foundation's decision makers. He and his fiancée befriended me, and I offered to make her wedding dress. The design she chose was reminiscent of Lady Diana Spencer's with a fitted bodice, three-quarter sleeves, and a full skirt, held out with masses of tulle petticoats. We did a run to Edinburgh to buy the cream silk fabric for the dress. Whilst I was making it, a cup of coffee was accidentally spilt on the bodice. I completely cracked, and it was the closest I've ever come to a nervous breakdown. Once I'd regained my composure, I was thankful to have both the time and enough leftover fabric to remake the bodice. After the fairy tale wedding in the Universal Hall, I was invited to join a maintenance team for a week at Tray Barn, the Foundation's retreat house on Iona, off Scotland's west coast. I was asked to make insulated blinds with state-of-the-art magnetized fabric, for the numerous single-glazed windows, using my trusty Elna sewing machine. I was looking forward to the trip until I heard that Alan had also been invited. As soon as I heard the news, I lost my voice. To my great relief, he pulled out, because the prospect of working with him for a week at close quarters had zero appeal. It seems I passed muster on the Iona trip by making all the blinds and holding the rain off long enough to paint the last section of the annex roof. In a matter of days, I'd successfully demonstrated both my practical and my spiritual accomplishments. At the time, I was unaware that I was being checked out for a staff position, once I'd completed my obligatory 2 years as a newbie Foundation member. On reflection, the youth project was close to Alan's heart. He had a way with young people, though I wasn't always sure his influence was a positive one. Lead Hills. Alan and I were cottage bound for 4 days because we were both running short of cash. Money was always tricky for him. In the early days of our relationship, I more than pulled my weight financially. Over time, I noticed Alan was always able to finance the necessities, both alcohol and cigarettes, with little left over for anything else. But I found it difficult to let go of my middle-class courtship expectations, for example, occasionally eating out. At my suggestion, we went out to dinner a couple of times, and as I recall, I picked up the tab. Alan's vision. Alan envisioned us as a typical nuclear family with two kids living in a cottage overlooking Findhorn Bay. He saw my role as the homemaker, holding the fort whilst he came and went, involved in projects across the United Kingdom, and further afield, if given the opportunity. From quite early in our relationship, I realized that should we continue, there would be little, if any, financial security, other than what I could provide. Children. I didn't have a biological clock ticking, but I now realize this was my last chance to have children. I'd never wanted to be a parent, because I knew instinctively that as an artist, the financial constraints my career choice brought with it would be tough on a child. Because of this, I was quite shocked to find myself considering the prospect of co-parenting with Alan. As it turned out, this was my last serious relationship, in a string of them, over the years. I'd had a boyfriend since I was 13, and now realized it was time for me to stand on my own two feet, instead of being buffeted this way and that, in a relationship with a man. When I reflect on my earlier relationships, I notice that I unconsciously strove to fulfill the role of the perfect partner. This involved fitting my life around my male partner's career, profession, and interests, until my resentment built to the point that I wanted out. But before the current relationship fell apart, I'd make sure the next one was lined up and ready to go. This modus operandi meant that I was never without a partner. I was 36 when I took up with Alan. I'd already formed my own professional identity, in which creativity and beauty were the primary drivers. Whilst I lived at the foundation, even my smallest efforts to beautify our surroundings were noted and commented upon. Regular confirmation of my artistic contribution was much appreciated, and became par for the course for the duration of my stay. These comments are my abiding memory of my years there. Revisiting Mexico. I loved Mexico, the people, the food, the language, the culture, and the lifestyle. When I arrived, I noticed that my Latin temperament quickly returned, and I swapped my Miss Goody Two Shoes Scottish persona for that of a raging party animal, minus the alcohol. And I had a ball. Facts. Mining at Lead Hills. Gold, silver, and lead were originally mined by the Romans. Later, the area was sporadically mined by the British, until all the pits were closed in 1938. The Lead Hills Miners' Library was founded in 1741. The library was for the benefit of those who were interested in books and reading. It's the oldest subscription library in the British Isles, and is of significant historical importance. To provide perspective, the library was founded 29 years before Captain James Cook sighted the east coast of Australia, and 47 years before the colony of New South Wales was founded, when Captain Arthur Phillip landed at Botany Bay, planted the British flag, and claimed the land for King George III. The Burrell Collection. The complex is home to William Burrell's eclectic collection of artifacts and material culture. He was a wealthy Glaswegian shipping magnate and art collector, who, in 1944, donated his entire collection to the city of Glasgow. Fast forward to 1971 when Barry Gasson, John Moynier, and Britt Andreessen designed a prize-winning complex, to be built 5 kilometres from the Glasgow CBD, to house the collection. It comprises medieval stained glass and tapestries, oak furniture, medieval weapons and armour, Islamic art, ancient artefacts from Egypt and China, impressionist works by Degas and Cezanne, modern sculpture, and much more, sourced from the farthest reaches of the British Empire.